Are you going to do the little song for me? Hello, bookworms. Welcome to the Cool and Smart Book Club podcast.
What's up, book grubs? Welcome to the Cool and Smart podcast. I am Barney.
And I'm Matt. And oh, this one's going out to all you little book caterpillars out there.
This one's going out to all you little book parasites.
Yeah, I just can't wait to climb into my little book cocoon and come out as a book butterfly.
Oh, yeah. And all those people that like reading at night, I hope you come, your dreams come true as a book moth.
I hope you become book moths and you're attracted to the light of books.
Exactly. Wow, literature really is the light of our culture.
That's what it is. It's a glowing light that shines so much light on information and that sort of thing. Hey, Barney, can I ask you something?
Please.
What's a book, brother?
A book, my brother, is a torch which shines a beam of enlightenment upon one's soul. It is words, pictures, emotions, context, juxtapositions, and finally, villainy.
Oh, a lot of people forget about the final element of a book.
Yeah, exactly. The missing element, as it's known.
Many a time I've been knocked back by a publisher because they've said, yeah, this is all good. You've got juxtapositions. You've got words. You've got concepts. Where's the villainy?
Where's the villainy? And they're obsessed with it. You know, at Penguin, at Pan McMillan, at
Random House,
Granter. They're all
Oxford University Press.
Exactly. Cambridge University Press.
Yep. Every textbook is famously rife with villainy.
Rife with villainy. Hey, Matt, I mean, we're talking about books, but I would just be desperate for you to tell me, what's a book?
Okay, here's the thing, Barnaby, is this is what a book is. You mentioned that a book is like a torch, and I agree, but I think a book is not a villainous torch, it's a heroic torch, like the Olympic torch, which was recently passed from person to person, all the way to the island nation of Japan. How they passed it across the ocean, no one knows, but that's how books work as well.
That's such a perfect synthesis of what a book is. You know, especially, much like people forget villainy, people forget how books get across the sea.
Who knows? No one knows. Scholars have been asking for years, how does a book move from one island location to another?
Exactly.
They can't
They're made of paper.
They get all drippy. The ink runs.
Yeah.
How does it happen? No one knows. A mystery.
No one knows.
And as I believe we mentioned last week, God is in the mystery.
Exactly. And that's where God is. So, warning to thou who seek to solve the mystery, you might not like the look of God.
Yeah. I like how we've really pivoted, I think, the last 3 weeks from actively mocking God to, I think, referencing him in every episode since.
Or her.
This is a podcast. This is going to be, someone's going to look back on this in years to come and be like, this is a genesis of their conversion.
Absolutely. How did
full-blown Catholicism.
How did Buddy and Matt become religious extremists? And these will be the artifacts.
I was trying to remember the word radicalized the other week. I was writing and instead I used extremified.
Oh.
And I'd never heard that word before, but I was like, that's the word I'm thinking of, right? Like extremified, like you become an extremist. And then the word was radicalized. I was like, no, extremified's dope.
Yeah.
I want to be extremified.
Oh, yeah. I want to be extremified too. You know who's been extremified?
Extremify me. What was that?
I said, well, do you know who's been extremified?
Who?
Tony Hawk.
I knew you were going to ask Tony Hawk. He extremifies. He was extremified himself, and he's gone on to extremify so many other people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully this podcast will actually be a genesis of the rise of a new religion based around Tony Hawk. I think that'd be sick.
Oh, I'm all in.
You seen that skateboard move they do where it's called a Jesus Air, where they go up and he could do that.
Yeah, he can. Is it Christ Air?
Christ Air, yeah.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
We've played video games.
Yeah. We played Tony Hawk's 1-2. What was your favourite Tony Hawk's?
Oh man, I actually didn't play. I played a little bit of Tony Hawk Underground, the one that had like Bam Margera in it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a lot of fun because there was a bit of like a, you know, pranky element to it. There's some other shit going on other than just skating. But my biggest skating game is Skate 3. That one's the shit.
Yeah, I am hugely into Tony Hawk's Underground with the like rags to riches story.
Yes, beautiful.
Just
what an arc.
What an arc. Unbelievable. And when Skate came out, I remember a lot of people pivoted towards that because it was better, because you weren't just mashing buttons. But
yeah,
I was like, I don't get it.
I want to mash buttons.
Yeah, I want to mash the buttons.
Yeah, it takes a long while to get into it, but we used to, like, in a share house I lived in, we would play, like, the same section of Skate 3 just over and over again, which is just this huge, like, hill section, and you just do these awesome, I don't know, what do you call it when you're on a skateboard? Sessions? I don't know.
We would just do these awesome sessions.
We just do these awesome sessions. And it was great. And we'd do the same thing over and over again and just do fun. And you got the hang of it pretty quick. There's a new one coming out and I'm pretty excited. But this is the Cool and Smart Book Club.
Book Club pod. Yeah, it's a book club. It's a book podcast. We talk about books on here, not skateboarding games. We don't talk about skateboarding sessions. We talk about books. And so therefore, to get us back on track, I would just like to say, Matt, what are you reading?
What am I reading, Barn? I'm reading a few books and I think you'll be interested in at least one of them.
Oh. It's always good in a book club when there's at least one book.
I finished last week. I mentioned that I was reading The Fear of Doing Nothing, The Notes of a Young Therapist, which you lent me.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it. It was so cool. One of the biggest things I took away from it was I just want to ask you, like, why do you want to do psychology? Because he does not make it sound appealing at all.
No, he doesn't.
Book is him questioning why he should bother doing psychology, and he does not arrive at an answer.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But it was interesting.
For me, the... one of the big takeaways from that book is there's a particular person that he sees really regularly who initially, I think the first session they have, he says like, oh, so you're the new one, are you? Well, guess what? There's been so many. And then by the end of the book, they kind of have this like, they've got this relationship and the guy's coming in more regularly. And to me, that was sort of he sort of talks about, he's like, what am I doing? Mm. What's the point in this? Wow. But that's also happening at the same time. And it's like, there is something happening here that's actually really positive for this person. And so that's...
I was really surprised, not really surprised, but I thought, just based on the title, it was going to be about the fear of doing nothing, which I imagine is something that is quite like proliferated in modern culture and that sort of stuff, because everyone is always on the go and that sort of thing. But realizing it was actually about his own fear that his therapy practice achieves nothing.
Mm.
Like, once that sort of locked in, like, I'm exaggerating when I said earlier that he doesn't really answer the question, because it is about he just finds all those sort of moments of like tiny little improvements, and learning to kind of focus in on those is really cool. And just the level of sort of almost creativity that was behind it, in he's describing all of his other colleagues and that kind of stuff, and how, you know, they might rely on one school of psychology or one particular form or whatever, and he's almost a bit iconoclastic. He's kind of like, I'm gonna just do whatever works, I'll try stuff, like bend the rules a little bit and all that kind of thing. I was like, I respect that. I think that's cool.
I think it's really cool. And I mean I agree with you in that, like, I don't think you of exaggerating with the, because it does sort of end, he doesn't end by being like, and I'm so pleased it didn't end this way. It would be such a betrayal of that book to end with like, and it turns out meaning that's found in the small things. It just it kind of ends with like, I don't fucking know.
Uncertainty. I finished that. I really enjoyed that. That was cool. Then I started reading this. This is one of the books I found on the street last week that we didn't get to talk about. It's called How to Raise an Ox.
Holy shit.
And it's not actually about how to raise an ox, unfortunately. It's about like a bunch of Zen practice from this guy named Dogen, who's like a big Zen teacher. And this guy's just like translated a bunch of his stuff. So that's interesting. But then I started reading this last night. It's called Against Creativity by Ollie Mould.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this?
I
actually bought it off the side of the street. I was walking past a guy and he had a blanket with lots of books on it, and he had this, and I picked it up because it was just, you know, I really value creativity and stuff. Mm. So I was like, against creativity? Who could imagine such a thing? And I started reading it last night, and I'm only like a chapter or two in, but it's really, really interesting. It's just, it's more of an argument against sort of capitalism and stuff than anything else.
Mm.
And the way that capitalism has commodified creativity, and what we nowadays, like the first few chapters are just him railing against the idea that every single job description nowadays, no matter what industry you're in, like mentions creativity. Like if you're going to be people are looking for creative bricklayers or creative nurses and all this sort of stuff. And it's just like a real corruption of the actual notion of creativity as it was, say, you know, 500 years ago or whatever. So it's a really cool idea. I think you'd really enjoy it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
I really, really want to read it. At the Unnamed Bookshop, there's a review by someone that works there, Nico, who is like, we're similar age, but he is like cooler and smarter than me in every single way. And so most of the time when he's read something, like, I will come to it like 2 to 3 years later and be like, whoa! Yeah. And that's that book. book.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. What is like, because my, just from sort of like flicking through it, my idea of it was it's kind of about this corruption of the idea of creativity in the workplace and in capitalist systems is not about creativity for creativity's sake. It's about a way of not indoctrinating, but controlling people or encouraging people to work more to increase capital.
Yeah, and the idea that he talks about is sort of just creativity now is that idea of creating more of the same or creating more things that can be manipulated by capitalism. There's a really interesting part in it where I'm trying to find it, where he talks about the way that capitalism kind of seizes on or appropriates things that are actively trying to destabilize capitalism. And it's almost like the capitalist defense system is that when a movement comes along that is like, we're anti-capitalist and we're going to do this and that and that, what like capitalist media and stuff does is it just names it and makes it a big movement and publicizes it. So now that it becomes sort of like just another element underneath capitalism, like, and you can sort of see that if you think about protest movements or like something like Occupy Wall Street, I'm sure that selling Occupy Wall Street merch makes a ton of money, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is insane because it's a complete reversal of what was intended of the whole thing. And it's a fascinating idea. Yeah, I thought it, as soon as I started reading it, I thought of you because it's all about, it's very cynical and it's very anti-capitalist. Which,
yes!
You know. there's in the introduction, at one point he says, creativity has become the very means by which capitalism can boast there is no alternative. And I wrote a note underneath it because you mentioned a book to me that's called like, it's called like Capitalism, Is There Any Alternative?
Yeah, the Mark Fisher book, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he wrote like a book about of uncanny short stories or something as well, wasn't that
him? So he writes like about cultural theory and then bases all his explanations off Phil. So like he'll explain, it's great. But yeah, he wrote a book about the weird and the eerie, and he's had a very famous blog, but he's a really, really prolific and great writer. But the problem, you know, he unfortunately committed suicide a few years ago.
Oh shit.
And for me, it's kind of like, as much as like I want to, you know, be like critical of capitalism, it's such an insidious, thing that a lot of people that I know that are more critical than me are also incredibly unhappy. And so it's kind of a bit, it's a bit scary once you start being that cynical about everything. It's exhausting.
I bet.
Yeah.
That was one of the things in How to Raise an Ox, is he talks about all the, how people who are usually like, you know, the people who are, you know, the most virtuous or whatever are usually really unhappy, whereas people who just can commit crimes and not give a shit about it are usually overjoyed.
Totally.
That's exactly what it is. It's a sad freaking little dichotomy of life, man.
Oh, it sure is. I want to I don't know if you've got other books and I want to go through what I'm reading, but I feel like it might be a good time to pivot to use a great capitalist term into talking about during the week you mentioned to me that you've been using one of those like micro book reading apps, I've seen lots of ads for them, and I've like been very interested in what they kind of can offer, but also like I feel maybe a little bit hesitant to jump on board because of the like the very nature of how they're designed, with like you can read 10 books in 1 hour, this is what CEOs do. I'm like, what? what are they, how does it work?
So I downloaded, I was just seeing all ads for it as well. I was running out for an app called Lucid, and it's that whole thing, it's just like you can read, what it was, the ad I saw was, it said it's like Duolingo for philosophy, and I was like, oh, that sounds sick, I love that. So I downloaded and just do like a free trial. It's fucking expensive. It's like $150 a year or something, which is, I mean, that's, you know, it's a little over $10 a month or something, but for once you download a free trial, and you can see there's probably total less than 100 books on there. And like yesterday I told you, like I was sitting down and I read like 10 books in 2 hours. And it's great. Like it's really cool. Like I read, so you've been telling me to read Thinking Fast and Slow for ages, and I tried reading it a few years back, and then doing it this way, you know, you get the key concepts in 10 minutes. It's the same with like, I read Capital in the 21st Century by Thomas Piketty, which was cool because that really influenced and I read a lot of other books about like the psychology of money and all this other sort of stuff, like a lot of business ones, which came in really handy when I started reading Against Creativity, because I was like, oh, I actually have a foundation for this now. But yeah, I love it. I don't know that I'd end up paying the full thing to maintain the membership, but I'm just going to try and literally read as many of these books as I can until like tomorrow, I think, when my trial runs out, because it's just so digestible and it's beautifully animated. Like it's just a real treat to read. And it's so like easy to just sit there with your phone on your lap and just don't have to turn a page. Just tap through. It's like two sentences per page and some diagrams. And it's just, it feels like the information like flows into your brain. It's lovely. Mm-hmm. I reckon you'd like it.
I see. I think I like, to me, that sounds like, especially for my brain, like the perfect way for me to, to read. But I am so, sort of anxious about missing things, missing context.
Yeah.
Especially when I read normally, when I'm reading a normal book, that the idea of just completely cutting that off and and reading like summaries seems so empty and like missing the way that the book's been structured and why things are included in the paragraphs that they're included in. Like the example I can think of is in scientific papers, you always, I mean, you know, you'd know this, everyone knows this. There's like an abstract 200 to 300 words that just summarizes everything that that is in the paper. But if you were to, and I've done this before, if you just read the abstract and then write a draft thesis about it, you're going to get absolutely slammed by your supervisor because...
How do you know this?
Just friends of a friend has done this. So, yeah, not me. But you miss all these key details and these other, like, really important things. So I guess, that's where my concern for those kind of apps comes from. Because it's like...
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to... I wouldn't have the goal to write a review now about Thinking Fast and Slow or about Capital in the 21st Century or anything like that. Because I'm missing so much context. I'm not going to go out and be like, Thomas Piketty's a moron. He hasn't even accounted for all this stuff. Because like he might have, you know. And I think what it's good for is that you get that summary. And like now I just want to read Thinking Fast and Slow more. Like I've gotten all the beats out of it. I'm not like, oh, I've wrung that book dry. I know everything there is to know in it. But now I'm like, oh, it will make navigating that book so much easier when I get around to reading it. Because bits of it will be familiar. And I think it will just make it much, like I'll be able to digest the extra information far better because I'll have all these anchor points throughout it that I'm already reasonably like attuned to.
That's such a good way of looking at it. That's such a good way of, I just assumed that it was like this finished.
I'm sure there's heaps of people who would use it that way, and I think it can give you like, there's so many valuable little just like action points that come out of so many of these different books, and there's so many like self-development ones on there, and you know, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and all that sort of shit. And like for a book that's literally called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, you don't need to read the whole book. You need to know what the 7 habits are. So that one translates into a lucid thing really, really well. But yeah, I think for the other ones, you don't have to treat it as it's more of a teaser or like a trailer than it is it's a supplement more than it is a replacement, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Because I guess that's similar to like a university lecture is exactly that. It's summaries of papers or books or readings and the key ideas, and then they're, you know, explained by someone that understands the context really well.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it more like that, or is it more, because I know with Kahneman, like he's got some really great stuff, but there's also a lot of stuff that you're like, well, that's what, bro? Like that's completely, you're just making that claim now because you're Daniel Kahneman and you think you can get away with it. Like, so is it more lectury, or is it more like, I don't know what the alternative to that is.
Hang on, where's my phone? I'm going to try and show you over this screen just to like, just to have a bit of an idea of how it looks. Cause it's so, I'll show you Thinking Fast and Slow. Cause it's really intuitive. It's just like really, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Like chapter one. It's, see, like there's a sentence, like there's very, very little on each page. Nice little animations. Like each chapter is probably, I don't know, whittled down to 500 words or something.
Yeah.
Like it really, like they've probably taken out all of his extraneous claims and all that stuff. They de-scientify a lot of it. Like you don't get a lot of stats and that kind of stuff. It's more just, it kind of turns everything into broad strokes.
Yeah, sure.
And I guess that is why afterwards you'd be like, okay, that was pretty broad strokesy. I'd like to get into the nitty gritty now.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, as I said, I think that's such a cool way of looking at it. And if that's the like the reason for its existence, that's awesome. But like, and it's difficult to like, you know, I guess I've hinted at it, but my anxiety around, like it's almost like a paternalistic anxiety, which is terrible about like, well, other people will just read that and that's it. And they won't understand the and it's like, well, I don't know that. So.
Yeah. If I'm reading between the lines as well, it feels like sort of like a moralistic kind of like, well, this is to the detriment of real books, you know?
Yeah.
But I think you can just have have both.
Yeah, you can, can't you?
Yeah.
You can just have both.
You can just have both. It doesn't have to be an either or proposition.
Yeah.
They're all good.
They're all good.
Download it, get the free trial. Just like get it for 7 days and then I think I got it last Thursday and then I sort of forgot about it. Mm. And then on Sunday I just had a bunch of free time yesterday and I just opened it up and spent 2 hours on it. I was like, oh fuck, I've learnt heaps.
I really want. I want to end my time reading on it with, "Oh fuck, I've learned heaps." That would be awesome.
It feels good. It feels nice. Because it is just like just a injection of knowledge straight to your veins,
straight to your brain vein.
Your brain, right to the main brain vein.
Yeah.
Barney, what are you reading?
I am reading. I'm still reading A.C. Grayling's The Knowledge Book.
The knowledge book.
The knowledge book. And I'm still enjoying it. I'm just reading it so slowly.
It's a slog.
Yeah, I've been working on my thesis and reading a lot, like just heaps of scientific literature. So by the time I go to bed and I feel like reading, I pick that up and I'm like, interesting. And then like after, I'm asleep or I am like, oh, fuck this. Like, but then I'm also reading Her Body and Other Parts, which I've got somewhere around here, the short story.
I think you told me about that last week, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's awesome. Yeah, cool. It's so good.
Sick.
I'm almost at the end. I'll let it to when I finished.
Please.
I just finished the short story that's told as an episode of SVU. and it was really, really bizarre and
good.
It was super interesting. So
I noticed we got a message from Scott Limbrick who recommended you Upright Beasts. I think he was defending the book.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go back to that or
I will. I just have such an aversion to stories, as I said last week, told from the perspective of an animal. that I was like, fuck it, no. But apparently that section ends and then it goes back to human.
Right. And I guess the thing about a short story is you can just skip one if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The other thing I think I like about short stories so much is the fact that if it's a bad one, you're like, well, this will be over soon.
I love that you say that and yet you couldn't persevere through the animal ones. That was a bridge
animal,
too far.
Unless they're animal ones. And then one sentence is too much.
Hey, what do you think of this, Barn? I've had an idea for an app. It's like Lucid, but it's for short stories.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it just cuts out all the crap, all of the nice sentences, all of the good writing, and just gives you story beat after story beat.
Great. Okay.
What do you think of that?
I think that's great. But I think take it one step further, and I reckon remove the characters' names. Remove the character descriptions. It's just A does this, B does that, then C enters. Like, I just give me the barest bones.
Cool. So you're saying we strip literature back down to just mathematical logic.
Yeah, exactly. A plus B or X plus Y equals Z. Like, just that. Yeah.
There are some people in the world who would find that sexy, Barney.
Yeah, they're... sexy. Yesterday, when I was driving to the airport, my uncle dropped me off, and he's a sort of like a real outdoors man. You know, he he's a man of few words, very intelligent man. And he said to me, we're driving to the airport, and he said, "Jimmy Buffett, here you go, Jimmy Buffett. What more do you need?" We were listening to Jimmy Buffett on the radio,
right?
that was an important piece of information, right? So Jimmy Buffett was in the back seat. So Jimmy Buffett is playing on the radio, and my uncle, a few words, the outdoors man, he turns to me and he says, "Jimmy Buffett, what more do you need?
What more do you need?"
And I said, "What a gorgeous send-off this is." And he, you know, had a little chuckle, which is huge. I don't think I've ever made him laugh. And then he said, "I don't think you should go that far." And I said, I just loved it. It was like one of my highlights of the whole trip.
Sounds like you have such a narrow range of, of emotion.
I think he's got like...
Don't go that far.
Don't go that far. He's a deep thinker. He's actually... He came to one of our shows and he unfortunately was the one that had to have a bit of audience participation. And
oh, no.
He was just like... I think... Like, I'm surprised that he still talks to me because of that.
What were we doing then? That would have been making him shoot you or spank you or something?
Yeah, something stupid. Yeah. I mean, cool. Something cool.
Something really cool.
Something
yeah.
awesome. I can't remember.
Something cool and funny. And,
something like breaking the very, very barriers of comedy. I can't remember what it was.
He split the fabric of theatre. It was beautiful.
Exactly.
Yeah, yep. I imagine that would have been pretty cringy for him, but that's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
hey, Jimmy Buffett, what more do you need?
What more? Gorgeous send-off.
Gorgeous send-off. Oh, taking a step back. Sorry, Barn.
I've done it again. God damn it. I've done it again.
So you're reading... What?
Oh, yeah, you go. Oh, no. Yeah, so I'm reading Her Body and Other Parts and A.C. Grayling's The Knowledge Book. I really want to read that against creativity, but I also have a question. I was like reflecting on things I've read during lockdown, and what is the most like psycho thing that you've read during, like, book that you would never have read, but just in the like absolute fever of lockdown, what have you read that at the time you were maybe enjoying and then post to be like, oh, what the
like,
what
was I doing? Yeah. Do you have one in mind?
No, well, no, I mean, I probably have quite a few, but I mean,
it's hard to think of off the top of my head. I don't know what
I tried
to read Infinite Jest again.
Yeah, oh,
I got 10 pages in. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah. I've never even tried to read that.
Don't bother, man. Yeah. I mean, maybe bother. It's probably amazing, but fuck. If you want to relax and read a book, you know. The Frontiers of Knowledge is a more relaxing book than that would be, I imagine.
Okay. Oh, I read, and this is on the opposite end of the spectrum, I read Stephen King's, it's called Salem's Lot. And that, I would never have read that outside of a lockdown kind of scenario.
Yeah, but at
the
top, sure.
And like reflecting on it, I was like, I would never read that again. What the hell?
Mm. But at the top, I read, tell me about Stephen King. Sorry.
It was just real psycho, really, really, really dated.
Is that vampires?
It's vampires. Yeah, and it's just like I don't know how. It's not like it's good, but it's not like something that I would usually enjoy. There's a lot of like white savior kind of shit in it. It's,
sure, yeah.
A lot of like dumb poor people.
he loves hicks.
So what were you gonna say? What was yours?
The only one I thought of was a book called, I think it was called 3 Hours. And it was like, it's a sort of book my mum and sister recommended it to me, because they're both, they love a bit of like Jodi Picoult, that sort of genre. I don't know what you call that. I want to say chick lit, but I feel like that's rude.
Yeah.
I don't know actually. But yeah. Anyway, 3 Hours was about like a school shooting, and it took place it's 3 or 4 hours. Anyway, it took place over like 3 hours. And it's not the sort of book I would ever pick up, like from the perspective of like the parents and the kids and the police. And it's all very fraught with emotion and dramatic and stuff. And I fucking loved it. It was really good. But it's never the sort of book that I'd be like, I should read this.
Yeah.
I was in between books and Abby or my mum was like, hey, read 3 hours. And I was like, okay. And it took about 3 hours. So
yeah, great.
Yeah. It was just action. It was an action packed romp.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. give me that 3 hours. Hell yeah.
Yes.
Yes. because working at, and you've worked at a bookshop, there is, it seems cringy to refer to books as a chick lit or a female lit or for that matter, you know, like male action books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they are continuously marketed in that way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's just lit, right? It's just literature. But then also the male action books will have like a ship with a wave crashing over it on the front and like a big gun. And then the chick lit ones always have like quite a simple cover and there's nature or there's like, like it's primary colors and a cool little design.
It's usually like, I imagine it's like, dark blue with some out of focus grass, and then like in quite small font the title in the middle. So there's actually quite a lot of empty space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. And whether the bro like action lit, there is no space on that cover at all.
No.
You could not find any space.
For one thing, the author's name is so huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
the author's name takes up 80% of the cover.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of see like fire through the gaps in the letters.
Yeah. Did you ever read many of the Matthew Riley books?
No. I did that. I think I read like Hover Car Racer or whatever.
Fuck. I've read Ice Station and I've read...
I would have read a little bit of Ice Station, I think.
But I've read quite a few of them. them when I was like 13 or 14. And oh my God. It's, I have like flashbacks to how fucked they are. Like, they're just so fucked up. Like, they're so violent. And
yeah.
And they're all about, like, violence is the first answer always.
Yeah.
And, like, the female characters a lot of the time are, like, kind of quite butch. But then also there's completely subservient to the male protagonist.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's, oh my God.
They're awful. I remember I tried to read Ice Station, and I think I always got up to the same point in Ice Station where it's like a big, some sort of shootout in the ice station. And I just never really, I was just like, oh, it's literally a blank landscape. I was like, there's nothing, all I can imagine is just white and guns. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. That's the point.
It was so boring. Yeah. And then I tried to read like, I think I've told you, I tried to read like The Bourne Identity.
Mm.
And I think these were books that were just sort of around the house because they're sort of more my dad's flavor of book.
Yeah.
And I couldn't read that either. But what I was going to ask you when you just said that like, they're so violent and violence is always the answer. Have you ever read a book that you couldn't keep reading? Like you had to stop reading it because you were like repelled by it?
Yeah, I had that with House of Leaves, actually.
Oh.
Because I found it so, like, existentially sickening that I was like, I actually can't read this anymore. This is so... And I'd love to go back and read it again, but, oh my God, it was just the way... Because of the way it's told, where it's like a book within a book within a book, and the fact that the way... The description of the kind of the horror of this extra space within the house is so... I don't know, like, it's, like, mentally upsetting. and when they go into this space, it's just, like, dark and staircases, and then that, like, the, it's... I can't... You need to read it. It's...
Dude, yeah. I don't know what's wrong with me, but this description makes me want to read it.
Yeah. but that's the thing. Like, when I was told about it, I was like, oh my God, I have to read this book.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, I've never picked it up again because I was...
Now you're a shell of a man.
Yeah, now I'm a shell of... I've been destroyed. I've been destroyed.
For me, it's... American Psycho, the Bret Easton Ellis. I bought that. I tried to read that in high school, and it just like it's just fucking sickening. Like it's always you know they talk about how it's one, you know the only book that's wrapped in plastic with like an R18 plus rating on it, whatever. And for good reason, like it is horrible.
Mm.
It's so vivid in its description of like all these just grotesque. The level of imagination that Bret Easton Ellis had to have, I hope, to have come up with all these different forms of torture.
Mm.
It was sickening. I remember I was reading it in the car park of a shopping centre in Tasmania. I had like a free... I finished school early or something and I just went parked in a car park and read a book.
I was waiting for you to explain what was going on there.
I'm trying to think about it now. Like, man, I'm like, why was I there? Why was I at Eastlands in the car park? Anyway, there I was. And I just had to stop. It was after I think he like... sticks a PVC pipe inside someone and puts rats down it.
Like, oh, horrible. God, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I brought it up.
Oh, goodness me. Oh,
gross.
Oh, goodness me. Well, I mean, I've remembered that I also had... There was another book, Heaven by Miko Kawakami.
You read that earlier this year, didn't you?
Yeah, that... Year? I had to stop this year. Yeah, I had to stop a couple of times because some of the because it's kind of there's like some very intense torture scenes that are so well written that they're not even grotesque. They're just horrible. Like you're like that. Yeah. That is that's a horrible thing because it's not about causing damage. It's just about causing pain.
Oh yeah, yeah. See, I hate that.
Yeah,
I get very pain squeamish.
You're pain squeamish.
Like I'm pain squeamish.
Pain squeamish.
The other day we were watching the MasterChef finale the other week and they had to rip the membranes off squid, which is fine. I can watch that. That's all good. But I was watching it with my sister who is a plastic surgeon and she was like, oh, that's how we take skin grafts. And I nearly threw up in my mouth. It was so horrible. I was eating my dinner at the time. I was like, Abby, stop. And she was like, ha ha ha. And I was like, no, like seriously, you need to stop talking about this. I feel so sick.
Oh God. I love, so hang on. Just the setting, Friday night, lockdown, you're eating your dinner. You're watching MasterChef at prime time on a commercial network and they're ripping the membranes off squid. And then your dearly beloved sister turns to you and says, that's how we do skin grafts. That is a hellscape of an evening.
That's it. Yeah, you just go into a tea. I mean, outside of the skin graft bit, I loved the rest of it. I could watch people cook squid all day. I loved the MasterChef finale. It was only the skin graft bit that really threw me.
Mm. I really love MasterChef, and I didn't watch this season because I suggested it to my girlfriend, Maddie. And she said, "Oh, MasterChef? No thanks." And then I was like, okay. And I don't know why. I don't know why I did that, because usually I'd be like, I'm watching it. But I went, okay. Yeah. And also, like, this has come from the person that also loved SAS Australia. So I can't.
In fairness, two very different shows.
Yeah. That's true.
They are both competitions, I suppose.
Yeah.
I didn't watch much SAS Australia. Love MasterChef, though. What I was going to say was the other book that I found, like, really existentially troubling was The Myth of Sisyphus by Albert Camus. I got a copy of that. I think it must have been 2017 or something. My girlfriend at the time got a copy of it from America and brought it back. And there's, like, this amazing used bookstore over there, and it just had fucking everything. And she was like, what books do you want? Like, old books, name them and I'll find them. And she found me, like, a bunch. And they were all these, like, ancient copies. So as I'm reading this book of existentialist philosophy, it's literally crumbling apart in my hands. It's like a constant reminder that nothing is permanent. everything will disappear. And that was because the whole crux of that book is, like, there's only one pertinent question in philosophy, and it's, should you kill yourself, basically.
Mm. Oh, that's right,
Yeah, and he flags that the idea is that the answer is don't, but it takes him a long time to get there. I feel like we've talked about this before.
I feel like we have too. Yeah, that is, that's the only question in philosophy. So every other philosophy, a waste of time.
Well, I mean, it's like the main actionable one. It's like, it's another way of just saying, like, what's the meaning of life? Is there any point to living? Mm. That sort of thing. He just phrases it very, very bluntly.
Yeah.
And then just makes you feel like shit.
Oh, man.
Because I feel like up until that point, I had, like, a childish, or not like an adolescent kind of emo idea of the idea that, yeah, nothing really matters. There's no meaning in the world or whatever. You just got to, the meaning's in the small things, Barney. But then once he, like, really laid it all out, I was like, oh, fuck, man. You've really thought about this, hey?
Yeah, you've really gone to the depths of this. Whoa. And you've worked. Oh, God. Yeah. I remember I went through, like, when I was 17, when I was in year 12, we had to write a short story as an assessment. And my short story was, like, it was told through the allegory of this, like, beehive-esque office. And this worker bee was, like, working, and then he was working to deliver something to, like, the boss that was the queen bee, and he trips on the way to the office and continues to fall through the floor into nothing. And at the time I was like, because nothing means anything. And then when you... As you get older and you actually are faced with situations to where it's like, does nothing mean everything? It is the most horrible.
Yeah. It's not funny or cool.
No, it's awful.
It's really scary.
It's awful.
Existential despair is the worst.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
When I was 16, I was like, man, it's cool to think that everything's awful. It's like, no, it's not. It's horrible.
Yeah. Exactly. I had a really good chat with my cousin Ed, who he'd be 17 now and much cooler than I was at that age. And he, we saw an ad or something for Rick and Morty come on the TV, and classic. He was like, I hate Rick and Morty. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't like it either. Why? And he was like, well, because it's just so, like, exactly what we've been saying with the, like, 17 year old, like, oh God, I guess nothing means anything. So I guess I'm a bit, I remember liking that show when it first came out, and every episode I see now, I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
I still watch it because I'm a big, like, Dan Harmon guy, but I feel like his voice isn't really that distinct in it anymore. Because every character is voiced by the guy who does Rick, and they're all just cunts.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone sucks. And yeah, it is like, everything's meaningless, nothing really matters. I'm like, okay, sure. Can you do something? Can you make a funny cartoon, though?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Could you make me forget about that for half an hour instead of reminding me over and over and over and over?
Stop beating me over the head with it. How many times does this guy have to attempt suicide on screen.
Jesus. Exactly. Well, the other thing is, it's so easy to take that position of like, nothing matters, nothing means anything, so if you even try, what's the point, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, cool.
Oh, I was reading last week about, I think it's called antinatalism. It's like a school of thought that just says birth is wrong. So it says like, so one of their things is like, and you can understand the ethics behind it, is like, you shouldn't have kids because overpopulation is an issue, etc., yeah, etc. You should adopt kids. There are kids available who need care. Adopt one, whatever. But then there's some people who go as far as to say, like, you should prevent the births of other animals and that kind of stuff.
Oh.
Like, you should sterilize animals.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously, like, your own birth is a mistake. Like, and they've got all this, like, sort of logical backing and stuff for it, but it's just, like, such a fucking grim outlook, man.
Oh, God. So what's the idea, like, if you were to succeed and no one, and all the animals are sterilized and all the humans don't have kids, like, eventually everything just dies out. Like, what's the...
That's the point. And their main thing, and I think you can read a lot of it in a lot of Eastern philosophy and that sort of stuff, is the idea that one of the constants in life is suffering, you know?
Yep.
So as soon as you birth something, you guarantee that that thing is going to face pain and suffering. So if you, like, their argument is that, like, if you consider it your ethical duty to reduce pain in the world, one of the easiest ways you can reduce the net amount of pain is to prevent life from occurring.
Yeah, right.
It's fucking dark.
Yeah, I find that... So,
I'm not into it.
Yeah, I'm not into it either. Also, I don't understand, because part of the way that, you know, we feel emotions or we view situations... in the sense of like looking at pain and then and pleasure or pain or happiness and sadness is, you know, it's a really basic idea, but it's like, well, they sort of exist, they define each other. So like if we were just had happiness, what is happiness then? Or what is the opposite of suffering that can be guaranteed? Yeah. I don't know.
I think they're probably categorizing things under being like, pain is bad, pleasure is good, but those are like items underneath those categories. So they're not necessarily saying you're getting rid of pleasure, but there's other good things like nature and all that sort of shit. So I guess they think that, like, if everyone dies but the grass keeps growing, then that's a positive.
Yeah, right, right.
But then I think that also doesn't take into account the fact that, you know, so much other stuff is predicated on the biological activity of life. It's ridiculous. It's a stupid, stupid philosophy. I don't care for it.
I don't care for it. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, it was pretty grim.
Yeah.
So fuck antinatalists. Yeah. That's our message for the week.
Barry Jones, I've got nothing to say to you. I've got nothing to say to you at this point.
Yeah, Barry Jones, you're all good, man. You're all good in our book. Books.
Yeah.
Hal Benson, he's still out there.
Yeah.
Don't know what his deal. I think I know who it is, but he's refusing to admit it's him. So
yeah.
Who else do we need to shout out? Scott Limbrick, how you doing?
How those big arms? How those strong arms going?
How strong arms? What was your uncle's name?
Michael.
Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. He did a great job. Great songs. Good times.
Great songs and good times. Hey, Barnes, so I have an idea for the agenda next week.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you 50 questions.
Oh my God.
About books.
Okay, sure.
And then, are you into that?
I'm into that. Well, then will I ask you 50 questions the following week about books?
If you want, yeah, sure. Right. I imagine we won't get through all 50 questions. It'll be more as much of a sort of a marathon as it is. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. That sounds great. Have you found these questions or are you writing them yourself?
I just came up with the idea just then.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
We'll see how it goes. I might come up with them on the spot. We'll see.
Yeah. That sounds great. What a good idea. It's very hard. It shouldn't be hard to talk about books during a lockdown, but
no.
It is. It is. I'm finding it quite hard.
It's tricky. I mean, yeah, I've been reading. I've been lucky to be reading a lot recently, so I have plenty to say.
But oh,
I
understand please.
You've got... Well, yeah. You're watching Rick and Morty. Yeah. You're playing Tony Hawk Underground.
Yeah. I'm busy. I'm so busy. Well, I mean, the problem is that I'm just reading academic articles and I don't want to go into it because they're so incredibly boring. So like if I was to start talking about it, I don't know what would happen.
Can you use one hot fact?
One hot fact. Okay. So in autism, the search for a predictor, a childhood predictor of adult outcome for autism, is ongoing. And the two most constant predictors are IQ, which doesn't change. However, on its own, is perhaps not a very valid predictor of adult outcome. And then perhaps the most constant of them all is age of diagnosis. And there are several theories around age of diagnosis for autism, in that if you are older when you're diagnosed, it might be because your symptoms are less severe. And so therefore, your outcome would be better. However, there's also the possibility that you haven't been diagnosed until then because you are living in an environment that's not particularly caring or conducive to you. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, your outcomes are going to be worse because of that. So there's your fact.
That is a hot fact.
Yeah.
I wish I had a little soundboard. So I could do a little...
Hot fact.
I don't know what the sound of just fire. That's good.
Yeah. So that's your hot fact. The majority of people, this is the second one. This is why I didn't want to start, because
you can't stop.
Because I can't stop. Second fact is, despite all our investigation into autism intervention and treatments to assist people living with autism to live better lives, the majority of meta-analyses and other research studies is that like 60% of adults and adolescents with autism have poor outcome.
Damn.
So yeah, it's rough. It's rough.
It's rough out there.
Yeah. God.
Well, I think that just about wraps up a relatively book light podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, you know what? We did some books.
We did some books. Kind of.
We did some books.
Yeah.
We talked about little mini books. We talked about Lucid.
Exactly. So in that case, we talked about like 10,000 books because they're all contained within that Lucid app. So yeah.
So actually, how about everyone gets off our case?
Yeah, exactly. Everyone
for 5 seconds.
Yeah, 5 seconds messaging us saying, "Oh, you don't talk about books," or telling us in person, coming over to our house, yelling at us.
This is the end of the podcast, so this is actually, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but this episode is late.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason for that is that Barney's dad confiscated his microphone cable.
I just can't believe. I was in Perth, and dad has a little pencil case full of cables, and he went down, him and mum went on a holiday down south to Margaret River, and dad was like, "Make sure I grab the cable before I go," and he took this fucking pencil case of cables down south with him. And I said to you, Matt, I hope he's like got them on a beach somewhere with little towels so that he's put them
I hope
out.
He sent you a little photo of them with like a pina colada or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for your patience, people who are listening. I hope it's been worth it.
Yeah, I hope it's been worth it too.
Worth the wait.
As always, get in contact with us on social media or email.
On 0400.
Give us a call if there's anything in the podcast that you want to chat about. Hopefully we've got a show coming up on the 8th of August.
I think you said August 8th.
Yeah. I made that up though, so I'm not sure.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. And apart
from... I'll double check right now.
Oh, great. Shall I? Okay, yeah, sure.
It's on the August 7th, as a matter of fact.
August 7th?
August 7th.
Right. Okay.
We'll also hopefully be doing Dirt that night as well.
Oh, yeah.
Late night sketch show.
Yeah, that'll be, yeah. It gets a bit naughty in there.
It gets a bit naughty. People say swear words. And people
say swear words.
Usually bring dildos.
Yeah. There's usually a couple of dildos.
Pretty much at least one per show.
At least one per show, yeah. Cool. Thanks for listening. You can find us on social media at Cool with a K and Smert, S-M-E-R-T. That's Smert.
Look at concentration on
you. Oh, yeah. I realized as I started spelling, I was like, "You can't spell anything, you idiot. What are you doing?" do you have any closing remarks, Matt?
Oh, increase the peace.
Wow, that's awesome. And my my closing remark is... lockdown might be tough.
I didn't hear.
But remember.
Our audio broke up. Go again.
Okay. Lockdown might be tough, but at the end of the day, you're made of all the right stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, I needed that.
Yeah, no probs.
I needed that. I'm going to tell that to Albert Camus.
Oh, please do.
Goodbye.